Hello, everyone, and welcome to the latest edition of the Providence Journal's College Basketball Podcast. This is Bill Koch, sports writer for the Journal, from my Warwick home on this gloomy Friday morning outside. The weather has turned a little ugly, but that generally means that the action is heating up inside, and that's certainly the case here in our college gyms. I am joined by my usual co-conspirators. First, the sports director at ABC6, the weekend co-host of Cordishy and Coit on WEI Providence. Nick Coit, ladies and gentlemen. Coity, how we living?
Doing great, bud. Doing great. Settling into conference play here. A lot going on, of course. Football season in these parts is over, even though I guess the off season has begun, and we'll be following very closely the very transparent process of finding the new offensive coordinator in Foxborough, Massachusetts. But other than that, it's a lot of hoops.
Stunningly transparent. Still not sure what to think of that. Have no idea who got into the speechwriters there and into the emails at Gillette Stadium, but that's another podcast for another time. Also joined by the sports director at WPRI 12 and Fox Providence, Maury Hirschgordon, ladies and gentlemen. Maury, how we doing, babe?
Morning, fellas. I'm waiting for Robert Kraft to start a Twitter account and tweet out all the interviewees that the Patriots have for OC, just like Mr. Jim Irsay out in Indianapolis.
We should say Maury's football season is not quite over yet. Go Birds, babe. Go Birds. Let's go.
We are off this week.
Off this week with the number one seed in the NFC. No, Maury was throwing out a couple Go Birds Thursday at Providence practice to Philly native Ed Croswell. Also, Eagles fan Jeff Battle, the associate head coach.
Clifton Moore. We've got a few on the roster.
Yeah, there's a couple, right?
Yeah.
A couple, maybe Jared Bynum, too.
Bynum could be one. Jaden Pierre, potentially Eagles fan.
No, possible. Jersey guy.
Depending on where he's from. But, there's a small handful there. Sometimes I feel at home, you know, over in Friartown.
Yep, small group, but mighty, for sure. Certainly will have their voices heard. Philly fan has that in common with Boston area fan, like Coit and I.
Yeah, better than our damn football team, so good for you guys.
Grim scenes at Gillette. Grim. Grim. Change is coming, and they are needed. Like I said. Coit 7-9 on Saturdays. Coit and Scott Cordishy will fight over those for 2 hours on your drive to the Dunkin' Donuts or to some youth hockey tournament or wherever people go at that godforsaken hour on Saturday morning. That is generally not me.
Bill, we can't talk about anything else. Scott won't let me do it.
Well, it is Scott's show.
Hey, so, let's talk about Scott's show. Your show? Scott's show?
It is Scott's show, as we know. But we were at PC media availability on Thursday. We will start with the Friars, the 19th ranked Friars. They have broken into the top 25 this week, the same place where they ended last season. They were the number 13 team in the country at the end of 2021-22, and now they are back among the national elite. Providence on a bye right now, enjoying a well-deserved week off after a 6-0 start in the Big East. You know, and playing as well as they have, you know, at any point over the last two seasons. Their most recent result, 83-80 over St. John's last Saturday, a win that brought them to 14-3 overall, a win that has them very firmly in the NCAA field, according to the net, according to Ken Pom, according to Bracketology with Joe Lunardi. They've already reached the point through 17 games here where really it's just take care of business and you're playing for a seed down the stretch. Providence, we are back at 41-9 in their last 50, 21-4 in their last 25 against the Big East. I think they've lost one of their last 32 home games. And you know, for me, guys, the St. John's game was the type of game that maybe in the 2010s, that version of Ed Cooley's NCAA teams, they might have lost that game. I think they've taken it to a different level now. I think they're playing at a different standard. I think their roster fits together differently. I think schematically they are tighter. They are better. They are more projectable against the best teams in the sport. And they are at a place right now where they've got a couple really good challenges coming up at Creighton and at Marquette on the road, two teams who you figure will be in the top half of the league. when it's all said and done. But for right now, exciting times in Friartown for sure.
Yeah, I think it's a great point, Bill. The fact that, you know, I wonder where this program is in terms of, you know, sort of what level it's on consistently. You know, because like you said, in the 2010s, is that a game that the program, you know, drops on Saturday against St. John's? I'm not sure, maybe. And that's no disrespect or to any of those guys that run any of those teams. But this program, it's right now, the numbers, you just read them out loud. It's rolling. And this is particularly impressive because we felt like we talked about at the beginning of the year that it was going to take some patience, going to take some time for this team to come together, to gel. A lot of new guys, a lot of new faces, but it's really come together. And it was interesting to hear Ed Cooley, when we talked to him on Thursday, talk about how, you know, we had pinpointed the loss to TCU, the win at URI, that little time frame, that was when something clicked with this team. And, you know, I think Ed said as much going on the road. It made, you know, Ed Croswell said it made us sort of look like, okay, this is what we can be as a team. If we work together, do all that, everybody contributes. It was interesting to hear again, Ed Cooley say that the Marquette game is when he really pinpointed like, ooh, I think I've got something here because of some of the talk that was going on in the huddle. The players may have taken some ownership as time went on there in the month of December.
Right.
And when that happens, you know, obviously it makes, you know, Ed's job probably a little bit easier because it's like, all right, well, I've done my job to prepare these guys. Now it's on them. It's on the players. And that's a culture thing, I think, because we saw a lot of that last year. What was it? The Butler game? They were down like 16-17 at Hinkle.
Butler on the road, down big early in the second half.
There's that big players only huddle where Ed's just standing outside of it and the players are talking it over, whatever, and they end up rallying and winning the game.
Right.
That's the sort of vibe that I get from that. And that, if that's going to continue, and that was a whole different group, you know, minus Jared Bynum, Ed Croswell, Alan Breed, you have your holdovers who have been very, very important to this stretch here and this run. But that's a culture thing. That's carrying over now. And that to me is, it's particularly impressive because, yeah, you've built something here that, you know, it could be sustainable. Even when you have an off day like that against a St. John's and you still come out on top, you still make the big plays, you still make the big shots. It's a culture thing. We saw that here. I just was bashing on the current version of the New England Patriots, but for two decades, they were winning a lot of things. Why? Well, yeah, they had the greatest quarterback of all time, but it trickled down in terms of the culture, and guys would come in and they would do the right things. They would take care of the details. They would do all the things that would be necessary for a team to win. Now we're not seeing that because there's no like culture establisher. Yes, you have the head coach, but you need some of the players to sort of hold that together. And so, you know, look, I'm not saying that, you know, the Friars are going to win, you know, six national championships or anything like that, but they're having a lot of success. They're having a lot of success, and it's because they've established a culture and they've built it up. And I think, as you said, Bill, I think it's on a different level now.
Yeah, you look even before the St. John's game, you know, you go out to the Midwest after having a solid win to start the conference play on the road at Seton Hall. You come home, you pull out a nail biter in a game that was a top 25 win at the time and really is going to be one of your most impressive wins at the end of the day at home against Marquette. You know, and then they have that long break and they go out to the Midwest for a couple games against Butler and DePaul. And, you know, like Bill said, you know, 5, 7, maybe 10 years ago, you know, these types of Providence teams go 1-1 or they go 2-0, but the second game at DePaul on a Sunday, it's New Year's Day. You know, they have their full lineup and they have to, you know, squeak it out in the last 4 minutes. Like that game was, oh, both games were over early. They just went out and you know, put it all out there early on to make sure that they built up a big lead and then didn't play around with it. And then, you know, you come home and Ed Cooley's teams obviously fare pretty well against top 25 squads at home. You take care of UConn. And then the St. John's game was even more impressive than the others, but falling in, along the same line of taking care of business. Now, you know, if you would have told a lot of people, you know, myself, maybe you guys included, I don't want to speak for you, but no Jared Bynum and Bryce Hopkins has his worst game in the Big East, then, you know, you might be a little bit concerned. St. John's has talent. Let's not dismiss St. John's as an afterthought. Are they a mess of a program from inside out? Yes. Is body language horrible when they take the floor pregame? Yes. Guys' hoods are on. No one's engaged. They've had instances of practice throughout, you know, the last couple of weeks that we hear. But, I mean, Joel Soriano, Posh Alexander, Curbelo, you know, there's a ton of guys I'm going to miss. Down the line, I mean, it's like an AAU program, so you just don't know what type of team you're going to get on a given night when it's St. John's. But if they come out and they all collectively play their A game, you get popped. You get popped by 10 or 12. And that did not happen to Providence. And it's just it's that next step on the ladder of, okay, you know, we were 20 and 10 for like 5 or 6 years. That got us between the 7 and 10 seed, right? I'm speaking generally 20 and 10, 22 and 11, 22 and 13. You get the point. Now it's you take care of those two or three quote-unquote trap games that maybe you were losing as the program was building and rising. Well, now the reason why you win those games is because – you're just attracting better talent. Ed Cooley's even more experienced than he is. A couple teams are having down years in the Big East. You have a coach that left in Jay Wright, and it's all sort of formed perfectly for Providence, and they're taking advantage of it. It's not just that other things happened around the league. No, you win a Big East regular season championship. You get to the Sweet 16. You attract talent like Bryce Hopkins and Devin Carter. And when you put all that together, the cumulative effect is no. Now we're instead of being 22 and 10, you're going to go 25 and 7. And instead of being year in and year out a 7 to 10 seed, hopefully you just win a game and then push a team in the second round of the NCAA tournament. Now it's you're going to be in that 4 through 7 range year in and year out with a chance to get to the second weekend and deeper, you know, annually.
Yeah, the last week, you know, certainly the UConn game, if you go back to that, Providence mugged them in the second half. They were the tougher team, the stronger team, the mentally tougher team, which was on display. You know, obviously it helps when you have a sellout crowd behind you and you're very difficult to beat in that building. But that's the type of statement win that will propel you forward and certainly carried into Saturday, because, you know, St. John's, it's a letdown spot. It's a noon tip, difficult to get up for after the way that building was against the Huskies. And they're still able to drag themselves through it. And as to Maury's point, they got a little help. St. John's is a disorganized mess. I mean, if you want a team to do something stupid at some point, just watch the St. John's game for 40 minutes. They will. They'll commit basket interference with 2 minutes left to take away a field goal. They'll take terrible shots. They'll get a technical foul for talking smack to Ed Cooley after a player makes a jump shot on a 10-0 run. I mean,
unbelievable.
It's just mind-numbingly stupid things that they do. But also to Maury's point, if you redrafted the Big East, if you threw everybody's roster into a pot and you let every coach pick players off of teams, St. John's would have 8 or 9 guys drafted. 100%. You could not say the same about DePaul, Butler, Georgetown, like the dregs of the league. St. John's is down there with them record-wise, but they are not down there with them by any means in terms of player personnel. They do a lot of this to themselves, you know, and that's why there's already rumblings midseason about Mike Anderson's future in Queens. He's into year 4. He's not going to go to the NCAA tournament this year, barring some miracle in March, you know, at the conference tournament. Providence has a different set of challenges on their plate right now, specifically Jared Bynum, who did not practice on Thursday, is questionable for practice on Friday. I'd be very surprised if he played at Creighton on Saturday. He's dealing with an abdominal issue. He did not play the last 30 minutes against UConn, did not play against St. John's. Guys, I would say, you know, Providence, the program, has experience playing without Jared Bynum. He has gotten hurt in his 2 previous years. But as Ed Cooley said the other night, this group didn't necessarily have as much experience playing without Jared Bynum. And at times against St. John's, it was a little rocky with respect to ball security, turnovers, decision-making in the backcourt. They will need to be better than that against Creighton, because that, despite their record, Creighton sitting here at 9-8, but if you look at what they've done so far this season, full body of work, their losses are, some of their losses are Arizona, Texas, Marquette, UConn, Xavier. Those are all top 20 teams, according to KenPom. So you want to look for the strongest 9-8 team in the country. Providence is tipping with them Saturday at 2.
Yeah, and I think it helps that they have a week here, the Friars, to prepare themselves for, not having Jared Bynum if he does indeed not play on Saturday. Obviously, that helps. You've got time. It was really impressive that they collectively came together when Jared goes down in the UConn game and they're able to get it done the way that they did. But it's going to be more on the shoulders of they're going to lean on Allen Breed. And they're going to lead on it. They're going to give more, I think, time to Jaden Pierre and put more on the freshman shoulders. And Jaden is a guy that I think I can't remember if it was Maury. You may have either tweeted it or said it to me out loud. But like, there's times where he flashes. There's always a play or two in a game where Jaden Pierre flashes. And I think they're going to need more of that. From him. Doesn't have to necessarily be a, he's just got to be a distributor, and he's got to be out there and be confident in running the team. And so, it's good that they have the week to prepare for it. And to your point about Creighton, Bill, Ed Cooley had mentioned, the fact that they were out without Kalkbrenner for some of this period of time.
Yeah.
And that's obviously a huge piece to what the Blue Jays are trying to do. I honestly have not watched them much this year yet. But knowing that they had Bailey Shireman, he was an impressive kid during the tournament last year, had 25 points, I think, the other night against Xavier, had a pretty good game. So this is no slouch. This is a challenge. Ed Croswell even mentioned they're walking into a hostile environment. This is one of the only places during the COVID season that actually had a crowd. which is really funny to think back. It was they actually did. That was wild.
Well, it's Nebraska. There are no rules in Nebraska.
I guess not.
No.
This is an interesting matchup. You're going to get a much more disciplined team than you saw us get, with St. John's. You're so right. It's so funny with St. John's. Sorry, I'm going off a tangent on St. John's here, but I totally forgot before watching that game. I see Curbelo on the floor, and I'm like, wait a minute. This is the guy. Wasn't this the guy at Illinois?
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, this is Curbelo. I'm like, they have this guy, and they're not doing – and with Posh Alexander, and they're not better. But that speaks to the point, guys, of the whole, Providence here has a culture. They have a great coaching staff. They have things in place that they walk on the floor and you know what Providence is going to do. They have a track record, and a team like St. John's, there's just no discipline. I couldn't believe when Soriano got that tech. I'm sitting on the baseline shooting the game. I get the shot. I hear the tech and I see Soriano's back to my camera, the shot. And I'm like, he just said something to Cooley. I'm like, what are you doing? What are you doing? It's just a bad culture. It is. It's a bad culture. I think Providence fans are thankful they have a great culture and a great identity established here, because it's leading their success. St. John's, that's what they need, because you can have all the talent in the world, guys. If you're not disciplined, if you don't take care of the details, if you don't come together as a team, all that stuff doesn't matter. This doesn't matter. We're seeing that with St. John's.
It was right in front of me, and Cooley laughed right in his face.
Yeah,
it's unbelievable. Just,
did not care. That's what Providence has become now. They wait for you to make mistakes. It's very early since Jay Wright has left. We're still only six games, but if you want any signs of who could be the next Villanova, and I mean, I am really early on this, and I'm not standing on 10 toes on this, but you can see the type of culture, you can see the type of player development, you can see the type of buy-in that Providence has right now, that that there are, it's again, I can't say it enough how early this is, but you can see there are some signs of potentially just, you know, Ed Cooley's the one of the longest tenured coaches in the league. Providence has had a good track record of getting to the tournament. Could they become the next Villanova team in terms of culture? Like this past week, I'm watching Gonzaga, three straight games. They're down late on the road in conference. Santa Clara, BYU the other night, and San Francisco was the first of the three leg.
Right.
Down 7 with 2 minutes left. They're down 10 with 5 minutes left. And they execute, and they wait for you to miss shots, and they wait for you to make mistakes, and they eventually just pull these games out one after another. It's only we're only 30% of the way through the Big East season, but when you look at the last couple years and you look at the success Providence has had, you know, maybe they're heading in that direction. Now, if we continue to move the conversation forward here, Creighton's a big game. We understand Providence is 6-0. If you take a minor step back, and we can readdress this before or after the Marquette game, the next four games are a huge turning point in the season for Providence, because they can go from comfortably in the tournament to, holy shit, you have a chance to win another Big East regular season championship.
Yeah.
If you go 1-1 on this road trip, you're 7-1 and you come home with two slouches, you can be at 9-1.
Right.
And 15, we were talking about this yesterday, Bill, 15 wins, depending on the right wins, could win the league. So you beat Creighton, now you're playing with house money going into Marquette. You lose to Creighton, everything is still the same. You then go to Milwaukee on Wednesday with a chance to sweep Marquette, and then they have to finish a game better than you. You have the outright tiebreaker. So Providence has done what they've needed to do through six games, and now has a chance to, you know, make a real statement in Omaha without Jared Bynum. And if they are to win one of these next two games without him, you know, we're not sure he plays Saturday, could still be a long shot come next Wednesday. That would be the 2 week point in when, you know, he suffered the injury. They've got a lot in front of them. And even if you do lose two and then you come home and beat the two slouches, you're at 8-2 at the halfway point. And every single person in Providence would have signed up for that on September 15th.
Oh, no question. I'd say this, Maury.
I think they'd sign up for it. When did they play TCU? When did they play? It's like December 1st, whatever 1st. It was.
Yeah, December 1st.
You'd sign up for it then. Because
yeah,
no, at that point, you're talking about, you know, you go to the tournament there at Mohegan. It's disappointing. You lose to St. Louis, lose to Miami. They have that little stretch, whatever. They're just not coming, you know, it's just not clicking yet. Oh, yeah. I mean,
you're going into Kingston with your season sort of on the line there if you lose that game.
Yeah.
You are totally out of the picture if you lose that game in Kingston.
You had said with the non-conference that they just didn't have a signature win, and they didn't really. But, you know, there was no panic there from the program, because here you are. Now you've got a few signature wins that you've racked up, and you go from out of the tournament bracket, whatever. And I know brackets in December, whatever, a lot of things change. But now you are comfortably in the field if the tournament starts today. It's wild. It's a wild tournament. You could go 500 the rest of the way in the Big East, and you're in the NCAA tournament. Obviously, I think they have much bigger goals to try to win the Big East, as you just mentioned. But if that were to happen, you're in.
That's my point. Like, such a strong start. You go 500 in your last 14. I mean, in the last 14, yeah, you're 13-7. You're comfortably getting a bye. You're comfortably at you're like probably no worse than the four seed in the Big East if you have the right tiebreaker.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you had gone to any Providence fan and said, "All right, sign up for 14-6 in the Big East right now, preseason," they're taking it, because 14 wins matches a program record that they set last year in the league. Granted, they did that in 17 games, not in 20. But 14-6, you're way into the tournament. Even though your non-conference strength of schedule is in the 280s, even though you lost to Miami and TCU, who are both in the top 20 right now, you know, you threw away a game to St. Louis, which ultimately would have come back to haunt you if you did not do work in the conference schedule like you have. You know, Maury, it's an interesting point you make about Villanova, and you look at the parallels with Jay Wright and Ed Cooley. You know, Jay Wright makes an Elite Eight. He makes a Final Four his first decade at Villanova. He gets into his 50s. He goes 13-19. He goes 20-14. His offense that second year is 113 nationally. It's not this player development efficiency machine that you saw later on. His next 5 years, he loses 5-3, 5-4, and 4, wins 2 national championships. The last of those 5 years, he has the number one offense in the country. As we sit here right now, Providence is at 21. That would be the best finish under Ed Cooley by a little distance. And if you look at the way that they've sort of restructured themselves at that end of the floor, that's what's made the difference here. They're always going to be gritty and tough and play hard and try to defend. To Coit's points earlier about what's St. John's identity, what do they actually do well year in and year out? Well, that's what Providence does well. That's their culture. That's their coaching staff. That's Ed Cooley. That's what they've established. He's lifted the ceiling on this by making meaningful changes in the way they play at the offensive end. The free throw rate is excellent. The offensive rebounding rate is excellent. The shooting is good enough from 2 and from 3. The turnover rate is good enough. But the way that they get to the foul line, and we saw it again in the UConn game, 29 for 35 at the line, plus 19 at the line against UConn. You can debate the officials all you want. You can debate if UConn's hacking people, if Dan Hurley's hurting them, you know, with what he's doing on the sideline. You can say that all you want. Providence does that to everybody, not just UConn, not just the teams with the coaches who are the most vocal. Providence has done that to everyone, and they've done it for 2 years now. And to that point, they force you to make the mistakes. They draw the contact and say, all right, here, is that a foul? Is it not? We're going to the line. Either way, we're going to get cheap, easy, efficient points. That's how we're going to beat you. So this second iteration of Providence is just so interesting in that way. And it's on a parallel timeline with Ed Cooley going into his second decade here and settling into that here. The patience of Providence's administration, their willingness to back Ed Cooley and his staff, their ability to do so, you know, to ward off a Michigan, to get his salary to a point where you're going to have to make a ridiculous offer to even entertain getting him out of here. If you're someone like Kentucky or Texas or Georgetown, if those jobs come open in the offseason and really send a ripple effect through the carousel, you're going to have to make a huge offer, you know, to even turn Ed Cooley's head. And that was not the case for the Providence coach 10 years ago, 20 years ago. That was a stepping stone program, a place that Pete Gillen left, Rick Barnes left, place that they saw better opportunity both financially and on the floor going forward. And that's not necessarily a slam dunk now as the Providence coach. So all that has come together here over the last 2 years and delivered us to a point where Providence is playing meaningful games at the top of the Big East. And another one of those comes on Saturday, 2 p.m. on Fox Sports 1 against Creighton, a really interesting matchup. Guys, we have another undefeated team in conference who we should take a look at, and that's URI Women, who played Thursday night at St. Louis, 76-65 win on the road against the Billikens. The beat goes on for Tammy Reese. They have beaten UMass on the road. They've beaten LaSalle at home. Those were the two teams who were picked ahead of them in the Atlantic 10. There's only one other team at 4-0 in the league, and that is St. Joe's. The URI women come back to Kingston to play Loyola Chicago on Sunday. But guys, another team who was in the WNIT last year, and you looked similar to Providence men, and you say, oh, it's a very different roster this year. You know, you think they can play in the top half of the league, but you're not necessarily sure. Where might this go over the next 30, 35 games? The answer is straight to the top, and it starts with Tammy Reese, and it starts with the talent she's brought in, the staff she's been able to retain, and what she's built here in Kingston during her time. Something really special going on there, and something that we should certainly be paying attention to.
Well, and you're having days and nights where, you know, different players are stepping forward, Bill, and that's crucial to any team's, you know, success. And, you know, and you have, you know, I didn't mention any names when we were talking about Providence because we had such a, you know, a broad discussion there. But, you know, when you have a Providence program for the men and you have a guy like Ed Croswell, who just every night is just going out there and, you know, sorry, it's cliche, but really he's like steady Eddie for them right now. Like he just goes out there and he puts up however 10 points. And I don't even know what his averages are, but I would guess, you know, it's around averaging like a double double. Right. And I was impressed last night watching a night where, you know, I think Maya Torre was one of those plays. She had 14 points, 10 rebounds on a road game at St. Louis. And to me, you know, Maya is going to have nights where she is, you know, scoring 20 points, scoring this, scoring that. She's, you know, and she made a few crucial plays down the stretch, particularly early fourth quarter last night. It started with the defense, which, you know, there's a lot of buy-in there from Tammy's squad. But then you know, really the big scorer was Emmy Renat off, you know, and she comes in, she's got what, 23 points. And, you know, she has a night, and then, you know, maybe Sophie Phillips has a night, and then maybe it's Siani Lassiter who has a night. Like they've got a lot of buy-in there. They've established a culture. It's sort of the same sort of talk that we were just having about the Providence men. I just think when you have a coach that has buy-in from its players, you're going to have nights where different players are stepping up, stepping forward, but it's those other players too that are just solid in their roles, do what they need to do. It's less for me with Maya Torre last night, the 14 points. It's more the, you know, the 10 rebounds, the blocks that she had. She had a key block. There was a transition basket. I think it was early in the fourth quarter where it was just like, okay, those are the kinds of plays that you need from your big players. And you're getting those consistently. And you're getting those in whatever the environment is, whether it's at UMass or at St. Louis, whether it's home against LaSalle, you're getting those from those players. And it's particularly impressive because there were a lot of new faces for this roster this year too. So yeah, 4-0, they deserve it.
Yeah. I mean, you look at that box score. Sophie Phillips starts, doesn't score. Emma Squire starts, 2 points. Last year, they are not winning if two of their starters go 1-for-2 from the field and give them 2 points.
Sure.
They did not have that sort of depth. They did not have those sorts of options. Last night, you get 32 points off the bench. Emmy Renat has 23, matches her career high. Dolly Cairns, who's back out of concussion protocol, has 7. Gives you a little offense there. To put it in some perspective, this is a team that won a road game against St. Louis, who is struggling, to be fair. But they committed 21 turnovers. They gave up 14 offensive rebounds. Normally, if you're on the road, you do those sorts of things, you get blown out. This team won by 11. You know, and would have won comfortably if they hadn't spent the majority of 40 minutes hurting themselves. You know, so you wonder just how good they are. You know, and I think they showed winning at UMass, the unanimous preseason favorite in the league, you know, just how good they can be. I know Tammy Reese, after they beat LaSalle, I asked her, I said, does this make you the best team in the league? And she said, no, I still don't think we are. I think UMass is. I think St. Joe's is really good. You know, I don't think we've earned that yet. You know, we are different. We are new. This is not the same roster. This is not, you know, we don't look at ourselves as a group that's favored to win the league or, you know, should be favored to win the league. But the more they continue to do this, the harder it's going to be for her to make that argument against them. You know, the other thing, and they made this announcement yesterday, which I think is really interesting. They're going to have a first women's basketball coaches show next Thursday. They're going to do it at Tavern in the Square in East Greenwich. I think it's a 7 o'clock start. You know, but now you have URI aggressively marketing, pushing, putting out on the sidewalk, you know, out on Front Street, women's basketball. You know, who would have thought that 3 or 4 years ago URI would be doing that, or really that any of the women's programs in the state would be doing that, you know, using women's basketball as a marketing vehicle. I think it's really interesting from the standpoint that, you know, find out what the ceiling is locally. Find out how much interest you have. You know, the attendance is up at the Ryan Center. They're modest figures, granted, but still much, much more in terms of people through the door than what they would have had 3 or 4 years ago. You know, it's quite the transformation there.
Well, and who wouldn't want to listen to Tammy Reese talk about basketball for an hour?
Yeah,
it's easy call for me, you know, like I think her, She's got a passion. She's got a, I mean, she's engaging. She's, you know, and her players are feeling that too. Her players love playing for her. You see it. That's why you're getting all the consistent performances you are. And that's why, you know, to your point, Bill, they're going to try to, you know, continue to improve on all those things that you were just talking about that they can be better at, which is kind of scary. And it, because she's so engaging and she's got buy-in. So yeah, you tweeted that, Bill, and I thought it was interesting too, but who wouldn't want to listen to Tammy for an hour, talk hoops. She's great.
Yeah. And, you know, I saw it a little bit at my alma mater, Quinnipiac, when they, you know, got to a Sweet 16 and a second round of the NCAA tournament in consecutive years. You just can't do that in Connecticut with who's in your backyard. But in Rhode Island, when you're really right now the only show in town, right? Bryant's sort of fallen off in the America East, Brown's struggling, Providence is middling. I mean, you know, you have an opportunity now to become the preeminent program in the state and, you know, maybe even too, and, you know, extending up to Massachusetts and, you know, maybe some people start to tune in Southern New Hampshire, places like that. Like, you could now carve out a little niche in women's basketball in Southern New England and in New England as a whole, you know, outside of UConn. You know, could Rhode Island become, you know, the second best or third best team in the region? And they're going to try to take a look and see. I think it's a great idea. You know, if it doesn't work, you're in the same spot as you were in, you know, 2 years ago. And if it works, then you've made substantial progress.
Yeah. I mean, you open the season, you lose at Harvard, but regionally since then, you've beaten Providence, you've beaten Maine, you've beaten UMass, and you beat Quinnipiac on the road, you know, which was a really good non-conference win. You know, and I think a lot of that scheduling was intentional. I think a lot of that was, you know, Tammy did want to play a couple up games non-league. They lost at Wake Forest. They lost at Princeton, a game that, you know, they faltered a little bit down the stretch, and she wasn't really happy with their execution there. You know, but you look at Princeton and what they've done the last 3 or 4 years. Princeton doesn't lose a lot of games. You know, Princeton and Columbia at the top of the Ivy League are excellent programs, you know, really tough. The Ivy League could have an at-large bid this year, you know, just based on the net and the way it's gone. And you know, if things break right with Columbia and Princeton going forward, if they win the majority of their games and end up playing each other in a conference tournament final, you know, there is a world where the Ivy League could have an at-large team in the women's NCAA field. You know, so if your eye is consistently playing Princeton, Harvard, Columbia, Yale, you know, teams at the top of that league, those would be good wins. And more importantly, it helps with your recruiting. If you were able to win regionally, I know, you know, to start off, URI's gone the international route, and they've sort of exploited that market inefficiency in that way. Their three signees in their class of 23 are all kids from the States and all kids who they could not have gotten 2 or 3 years ago. You know, and so they are at the point where they're establishing themselves on multiple fronts here, you know, and I think most importantly, which is where you want to start, is in your conference. And when you are consistently beating teams in your conference, winning games in your league, you can branch out from there. And the URI women have done that. You know, they have Loyola Chicago coming at noon on Sunday. That is a 12 p.m. tip on CBS Sports Network. That will be a national broadcast. I think I'm going to be in Kingston for that one. I think that might be the only game on our schedule that day. You know, we'll go to the URI men next, you know, because they played another thriller the other night against St. Bonaventure. You know, we are really getting value for money watching the URI men with respect to, you know, heart rates being where they are. They make a defensive stand late. They get two big free throws from Ish Leggett late. They win 68-67. It was a game where they had a comfortable lead. They gave up an 11-0 run. They didn't have a field goal for the last 5:08. All the warts of a rebuilder are on display. The difference, unlike at LaSalle over the weekend, which was a crushing overtime loss, the difference is that the players get the payoff of a win. And coaching staffs can talk about process. They can talk about we're doing the right things and we're getting better and whatever else. Players need that validation at the end of the day. They need it in the column, and it's critical for URI to pull out some of these games. You know, just looking at their schedule, they lost their first five games this season that were decided by 5 points or less. They're 3-1 in their last four. And the LaSalle game was one that, you know, they fouled a three-point shooter with less than 5 seconds left. That was a game that they could have won. Now, you can argue it could have bounced out the other night. St. Bonaventure, that's a game they could have lost. Okay, fine. But the fact is that those sorts of results help you build a little bit of confidence and help reinforce what Archie Miller and his staff are trying to get across.
Well, and what's well, first of all, they won four straight home games. And you're getting validation of, all right, you know, little things as you're building up a program. One of them should be, you know, protecting your home floor. And they've won four straight. If I'm not mistaken, that includes the UMass Lowell win, which UMass Lowell, they may win America East. And that's pretty good. And so, yeah, four straight home games they've won. They've made the plays late. I think the thing that struck me, guys, is just how positive this week Archie Miller has been about his players and their process and the things that they're doing outside of games in terms of practice. Like he said to us, what was it, Monday when we had the media availability, that he genuinely is enjoying coming to practice every day and working with these guys. And that's that thing about, I keep coming back to it, I'm the culture guy today, guys. That's that thing about establishing culture and establishing a program and establishing a routine and what you are. And, you know, there's a level of expectation that Archie Miller has that he wants his players to meet. And more, you know, slowly but surely, they're meeting it. And he loves that these guys, he said it the other night, he loves that they don't stop learning. You know, they continue to take coaching. And I think that's the best thing that you can get as a coach is the validation that these guys are bought in and they're listening to me and they're listening to what we're trying to tell them and the staff. And, you know, when you do that, you're going to start getting the validation of wins. And at home, in particular, last month, it's worked out well for them.
Yeah, and we talked about it in the offseason, I think, and we're seeing it come to fruition now, the importance of retaining guys like Yesh Legan and Malik Martin, you know, to make sure that your program stays afloat early in the season during the first year of a rebuild when things aren't going your way. Guys that are still bought in, still coming in, getting shots up early, getting shots up when you have a day off from practice, getting shots up when you come back from an early afternoon Saturday game. The guys that just do the right thing all the time, that don't need the coaching, that set the example, that we hear all the time from Ed Cooley about player-run programs. And you know, I mean, Ish Leggett needs to, like, get on his knees and bow down to Archie Miller for resurrecting his career and getting the most out of him. 23-14, Archie Miller said, one of the most dominant performances he's seen. It's just a guy who's finally playing to the level that he was capable of. And there is no coincidence that new coaching, better coaching, and playing with a better identity has helped that. And, you know, you look at them and they get to the line. They have a lot of guys that attack the rim hard. They play the game the right way. You know, Malik Martin can get to the line a lot. Jalen Carey got to the line 8 times the other night. Ish Leggett got there 11. So, you know, you sprinkle in a little bit of Breon Freeman and Brandon Weston, and you're at the line 29 times. They got to the line 16 more times than St. Bonaventure, and they made 15 more than the Bonnies. And that's a huge difference when you want to pull these games out. The sign of a good team all the time is, do you get to the line a lot and do you make a lot of foul shots? Is one of the cardinal rules in basketball. And right now they are. And when you convert at a high level, that's the way that you pick off some of these games and you can expedite the rebuild process.
Yeah, because otherwise offensively, I mean, they don't shoot the ball very well from two or from three. But similar to Providence, they get to the line and the offensive rebound. And that keeps your offense viable in some way. You know, they're in the 240s in offensive efficiency, but they're in the 300s in the shooting categories. You know, the foul shots and being able to get to the glass sustain them right now. You know, and eventually when you get a little more talent in here, when you're able to spread the floor a little more, when you have you know, a few more guys who can do a little bit with the ball in their hands, you know, that's when I think you'll see big jumps with this team. You know, you look at the other night, someone like Brandon Weston, who you mentioned there, you know, has had a good five-game stretch here. You know, had a career high the other night with 11 points. And I think, you know, to his credit, he said Monday during the availability, he said, you know, early in the year, I wasn't really playing very much, and I didn't really have the right attitude going to practice. You know, I wasn't necessarily practicing that hard. I wasn't really putting it all out there every day. You know, and my results in games have come with a better effort every day in practice behind the scenes. You know, I've gone to the coaches and said, what do I need to do to play more? You know, what do I need to do for you guys to trust me a little bit more? And he's responded to their feedback. And that is growth and improvement in real time. You know, you look at someone like Ish Leggett, Maureen, you mentioned him. Character is never the question there. It's a matter of whether or not he's good enough. You know, and last year, if you look at their, you know, sort of their roster composition and the fact that they were playing multiple big guys at the same time, you know, really clogged the lane inside, really took away those driving lanes to the basket, you know, put bigger bodies around Ish Leggett, a guy who from the guard position is a really good rebounder, you know, for his size. You know, but when you've got the Mitchell twins and you know, others just sort of clogging the lane and standing under there, you might have taken away some of the best parts of Ish Leggett's game. He's not, you know, he's not a guy who's going to shoot 45% from three and, you know, not a guy who's going to beat everybody down the floor and be flashy in that way. He's a dirty work junkyard dog type of player. You know, and I think he's been, you know, sort of opened up here in, you know, with the schemes that they're running, with the offense that they're running, with the spacing and a little more motion. You know, it's really worked for him. It's really worked for Jalen Carey. You know, credit to Malik Martin, who got his 1,000th point the other night. You know, his work ethic, his attitude are bedrock for this program. You know, definitely the type of guy who you can lean on if you were in that locker room. They are shorthanded. They're playing without Joseph Fat-Bilau. He had right knee surgery. He is out for the year. Will miss part of next season as well. It was a full ACL reconstruction. So you look the other night, they only played eight guys, and maybe – yeah, maybe that's a good thing going forward. Archie Miller did say, you know, we feel like we found a rotation a little bit here. Maybe you find some chemistry too. You know, maybe you find some comfort level too. I think, you know, they have opportunity here going forward. You're playing at UMass, who just lost to LaSalle at home. You're at Richmond, which will be a tough game. And then you've got a stretch of three straight at home. You got George Mason, Dayton, and LaSalle coming in here. You know, to Coit's point, you won four in a row at home. Can you go 2-1 in that stretch? If you can, then you're staying trending towards 500 in the league, you know, 8-10 in the league. I don't think that'd be a bad showing for year one.
No, and it's a really, really interesting game from a lot of different angles on Saturday in Amherst. You talk about two programs with first-time head coaches, two programs that are trying to get out in front of a rebuild. Two programs that have lost tight games to LaSalle this season, you know, regional quote rivals. I'm curious to see what type of URI team shows up, after the performance that they had on Wednesday, the result that they got, in that fashion. Now you're going on the road, not a long road trip, but you're going on the road to a program in a similar spot, but who's coming off of two straight tough losses. Say it all the time, say it until I'm a broken record. It's not about who you play. It's about when you play them. You know, you're going to face a UMass team that's hungry. It's going to be a pretty pivotal game here early on in the season.
Yeah. You know, speaking of pivotal games as well, I mean, you look at URI UMass, that is a 4:30 start. I think that's on Nesson. I think Nesson or Nesson Plus are going to pick that one up.
They usually pick up some of the UMass stuff every once in a while. Yeah, I mean, they pick up a lot, but yeah, it makes sense.
That could be our buddy Jim Kane on the call there. I know Jim Kane.
Oh,
I think it could be.
Nice. Another one of those former ABC6 interns. You know, those guys. Those guys go different places and they just flourish, right, Maury? They just flourish.
Well, they come in with such a high IQ from their past coach that, you know, makes them such an attractive acquisition.
Oh, that's wow. Right. That's right. NWO for life over there.
Yeah, the UMass broadcast. Jim Kane, for folks who don't know, Jim Kane is on the Worcester Red Sox call. That is his main gig, you know, but he moonlights with UMass over the winter, as most baseball announcers do, you know, certainly those in the minor leagues, you know, those in the majors you might see on ESPN. I know, Maury, was Dave Fleming on the call last night for Gonzaga? I think he was.
I believe he was.
Yeah, he gets a fair amount of Pac-12 and high-profile WCC games. You know, West Coast Conference, good basketball for junkies like Maury and I who are going to stay up late. You know, you get that rotation of Gonzaga, BYU, San Francisco, St. Mary's. Like, you know, those are the teams that can win you an NCAA bracket or you know, maybe help you if you want to invest a little bit on the side. you know, maybe a little bit here or there. Another team that could help you to that end is Bryant when they are playing well, because at times if Vegas isn't sharp on their lines, they can fatten your pockets a little bit. Bryant got back to winning ways the other night against Albany, a game they were expected to win at the Chase Center. But it hasn't been that easy for the Bulldogs lately. You know, obviously they were humbled at Vermont, did not play well in that game. That's a showdown game at the top of the America East, and Bryant laid an egg in that one. You know, lost to UMBC at home. You know, another game where Jared Grasso wasn't necessarily happy with how they played, you know, specifically not in the first half. Second half he felt was a little better, but, you know, another game that was not a complete 40-minute effort. The other night at Chase Center was a little better. 86-69 over Albany, a game in which Antoine Walker went crazy and Charles Pride was right there with him. You know, good to see the Bulldogs back to winning ways ahead of playing New Hampshire. This looked like the team we expected to see and the team that we saw at times in the non-conference. You know, but certainly Bryant sort of reminding us that, yes, they are finding their way in a new conference, and that if they do not play well at certain points, that they could fall on their faces.
This is a tough league, and this is going to be an interesting league because of some of the results that we're seeing, because this team's beating that team, but that team's beating this team. You know, Vermont, who we know is the perennial, we go in. It's funny. I think we were going in thinking like, well, Bryant's number two in the preseason poll, Vermont's number one, and those are going to be the teams with, you know, UMass Lowell has come on strong, whatever. But, you know, there's one night where Vermont might beat Bryant, but then they get beat by UNH, and I keep confusing the teams that are beating other teams, whatever, but they get beat by UNH. And then Albany, they beat UMass Lowell by 26, and then they come to Bryant and Bryant beats them up. Like, this is going to be a Royal Rumble in the America East. You know, but I think Bryant has, you're right, I think they've sort of righted their ship the way that they play. You know, whatever happened at Vermont, it sort of threw them off. And Jared Grasso had said that even going into the Binghamton game, they just made shots. They didn't necessarily play the way that they really wanted to play. I think we saw with the Albany game that they played sort of their style, push the pace, you know, get a lot of possessions. And having a guy like Antoine Walker, I just think with how athletic he is, he can get out on the run. He can also shoot the three. You know, but just the way that they play with pace, I think, has really benefited him going from Kingston to Smithfield. And, you know, and then just the way that he, you know, crashes the glass too. He stuffed the statue the other night. And look, you're not going to lose a lot of games if you're Bryant and Charles Pride makes 8 3-pointers and goes 8 for 13 from beyond the arc. That's damn good. You know, but Walker was really particularly impressive, and he talked about the great shape that he got in because the coaching staff over the summer just riding him. And, you know, he was in the postgame press conference. He didn't look that tired. And that's a credit to the staff knowing what to do with him. And, you know, sometimes a guy goes from one program to the other and it's just a fit, or a coaching staff sees like, okay, this is what we can do with you. And we've seen that Bryant was right about what it can do with Antoine Walker and how it can help this team. He's really been unlocked.
Yeah, it really helps when you make shots.
Sure.
First and foremost, 15 threes or however many they hit the other night. You know, that I think they was 9 in the first half and 6 in the second. But, you know, aside from the making of shots, I'm just curious, you know, we hear time and time again now from Grasso, you know, oh, we needed this type of loss, or I expect them to come back. It's like, you know, they get blasted by Liberty. We needed that. It was a wake up. We needed that. And then they come back and they beat Binghamton. Then we go on the road to Vermont, you know, and then we go on the road and then we come back home and we get blasted by UMBC. We needed that. We need a wake up call. We don't have championship culture habits. How many times until that just becomes a little bit numb in their brain does the team need that? Right. Or is it just, you know, you have to make shots in games. Now we don't see what goes on behind the scenes. We're practice a little bit here and there. But I have to kind of see how the rest of January goes. It's a much tougher league than I thought coming in. Bryant hasn't performed to the level that they're capable of. So maybe there's a little bit of that involved as well. But, you know, not having Kayvon Kramer continues to hurt this team. They don't have a rim protector. They don't have a guy who solidifies the middle of their defense like Hall Elijah did last year. You're playing a little bit, you know, out of position. You know, you don't really see that against a team like Albany, but you will see that against the UMass Lowells and the Vermonts of the world. And Antoine Walker forced to play more of the five. So right now, I don't really know where to sit on this Bryant team. We knew coming in they were going to compete for America East Championship. They're 2-2 through four. They're finding their footing in a new league. I don't expect them to finish any worse than the 3 or 4 seed in the league come the end of the regular season, barring maybe another injury. But you know, right now it's really just ho hum for Bryant. You know, there's not much really that I'm shocked about, and there's not really much that I've been, you know, all that impressed with.
Finding balance for them, I think, has been more difficult because you have more guys on this team than last year who want to play with the ball in their hands and want to be your lead scorer. If you look at last year's roster and you look at their usage rates, Peter Kiss obviously is very high. He's leading the nation in scoring. Charles Pride's right there at number two. After that, a lot of really low-maintenance players on that team. If you're looking at Hall Elijah or Greg Kalix, you know, Luis Hurtado was a guy who wouldn't really look for his own offense. He was more of a facilitator in that way. Adam Alita was a spot-up three-point shooter. He wasn't a guy who was going to dominate the ball and try to drive in any way. Tyler Brelsford was still trying to find his way. You know, wasn't necessarily a guy who was going to dominate the ball. I think that team had very clearly defined roles. And I think if you look at this current Bryant team, you're still trying to find that balance between, you know, four guys who really needed a lot, you know, whether that's Sharif Gross-Bullock, Charles Pride, Earl Timberlake, Antoine Walker. Three of those guys are used to playing with the ball in their hands and trying to create for themselves. You know, Walker can do a little bit more on the glass. He can be a little bit more of a catch and shoot guy. You know, but the other three, when you see Gross-Bullock taking a lot of shots, you sort of see Pride fade into the background. Is that the best for Bryant going forward? You know, someone like, you know, Doug Eddard, how do you mix him in? Chauncey Hawkins, how do you mix him in? This is sort of roster building in real time. And I don't necessarily know if they have as many obvious fits as they did last year. I think that's on the coaching staff to find that going forward, to find, you know, minutes, lineup combinations, how they allocate, you know, shots among the group. They're going to have to take harder lines on that, I think, going forward to get the most out of guys. You know, I think any given night you could have a couple guys score. I think back to the original, you know, the NBA super team when they tried to put it together, it was the Heat. And it was, you know, James Wade and Bosch are going to play together. And that first year, how many nights did all three guys play well? You know, did all three guys have 20, 25 points? You know, how many nights did they all shoot well from the field? It's difficult in that way to try to get talent to align. And, you know, Bryant by no means is that good. I mean, I'm not saying that they have three Hall of Fame NBA players. Don't jump down my throat for that. But on a smaller level, just on a basketball level, schematically, and what you see on film, what you see on the floor, I think that is their challenge going forward, is to more clearly define those roles, put hard lines between them, and try to maximize what each guy can give you.
Well, and I think Jared Grosso sort of hinted at some of that searching still a little bit the other night, just talking about how, you know, I think Chauncey Hawkins, I don't think, played against Albany. He didn't get on the floor. And he said, you know, this is not a, it's not a disciplinary thing. It's not, I didn't see anything in practice, whatever. It's just what was on the floor was working. And so I stuck with it. And, you know, how much of that is going to help them find whatever they want to do clearly with a, you know, guys on the floor rotation, getting them shots. Obviously, you know, their offensive pace and pushing the pace, pushing the tempo, trying to increase the possession count will help maybe with some of those guys getting shots and, you know, being able to shoot the basketball. But you're right. It's a search right now in terms of finding that, that balance. And when you talk about the balance too, you know, Morey hinted at defensively, I think they realize that if they can get a healthy Kevon Kramer back, it's really going to help them on the defensive end of the floor. Because I think part of them pushing the pace right now and getting more possessions is, you know, I think that's their stronger end of the floor right now is the offense when they're making shots. You know, because defensively, I'm just thinking ahead here. I think they play at UMass Lowell next weekend. Dealing with Koulibaly is going to be a very difficult task for this team. I mean, it's difficult for anybody in America East, but particularly this team, you know, because that's a guy that that's one of those guys you go into a game and say, all right, where are we going to, where's our foul count going to be distributed? Because he's going to rack it up with whatever we're trying to do defensively. And we got to keep guys on the floor. We got to keep them in the mix. So, you know, how do we go about this? And so, yeah, getting a guy like a Kramer back could really, really help them, you know, down the stretch, particularly with a team that has a big that's really strong.
Should be hard playing against Koulibaly. The guy started his career at Pittsburgh. He's an ACC-level recruit. Then he goes to St. Bonaventure. Now he's at UMass Lowell. Same thing going up against Antoine Walker. It should be hard. Started his career at Georgetown, then URI, then Bryant. They're both two levels higher than where they are now in the America East. And if you look at the Player of the Year race, in the America East, you know, you got Clarence O'Daniels at New Hampshire. He was a JUCO transfer. You know, you got Dylan Penn. He was a transfer from Bellarmine, which has played at a very high level, you know, in the last few years. You got Antoine Walker there. You know, certainly you've got Abdul Karim Koulibaly there. You know, these are guys who are stepping down from Power Fives, you know, from the Big East, from, you know, mid-major plus leagues like the A-10. Or the Horizon or the Valley. Not easy to play at the top of that league. You know, not easy to recruit that sort of talent if you are Vermont, Bryant, UMass, Lowell, you know, at least not the first time. You know, but it's how you mesh it together the second time or maybe on their third chance. And New Hampshire, you see them, you know, that's Bryant's next opponent this weekend. It's the 1 o'clock tip on Saturday. You see New Hampshire coming together. Started off 3-6. They're back up to 8-8. They're 3-1 in the league. Their wins are Vermont at home and then at Maine, fairly comfortable win by 13 on Wednesday night, a team that is playing very well currently and one that, you know, granted, Bryant has some better challenges next week, whether it's NJIT or UMass Lowell. But, you know, I think they've been taught a lesson, and maybe we have as well, that, you know, you can't just overlook the bottom half of this league.
No, it's not like the NEC. There are teams, you know, that can pick off, you know, the top team or two come conference tournament time. Those teams that slip in as the 7 or the 8 seed. It is a much deeper league than the NEC, and you have to come ready to play 40 minutes night in and night out. This is, you know, you go from the NEC where it's, you know, really four teams to you're in the America East now. It's not a huge step up, but it's a step up enough where it's a legitimate league that, you know, has a formidable 6 or 7 squads.
All right, boys. So lastly on the pod, well, actually not lastly, but we will put this in now. Kentucky. We sort of alluded to this at the start of the podcast. You know, the fact that there could be ripples in college basketball with some openings this offseason. Kentucky could open. It was an explosive article in The Athletic by Kyle Tucker this week that said that John Calipari and his athletic director, Mitch Barnhart, are no longer on speaking terms. They are not getting along. Kentucky is struggling. Personally, I think because college basketball has never been older, and Kentucky with the one and done model, you're a freshman being exposed. You're really the only guy who's playing at a very high level on the national scene is Brandon Miller, who's at Alabama, who is sensational. But it is difficult for these guys coming in who are ticketed for the NBA, who are now playing against fifth and sixth year COVID seniors, who are 23, 24 years old. They don't care if you're Brandon Miller. They don't care if you're a five-star, one and done type guy. They don't care about that. They're ready to take advantage of you. You're a little brother to them, So John Calipari's hit the rocks a little bit at Kentucky. Whether or not he stays beyond this season, who knows? We get the feeling that Georgetown is going to open at the end of this season, potentially. Texas is in an interim situation with Rodney Terry after they fired Chris Beard. That's another major job on the carousel. So could any of those three touch us in any meaningful way? Could we have a coach here pursued or maybe a coach from another school pursued and ultimately that leads to a coach here being pursued? Guys, any big picture thoughts on Kentucky specifically?
I think, if I'm Ed Cooley right now, I call my agent and I say, get me on the phone with all three of them. If just for the simple fact of having a conversation, learning about their operation, maybe you pick up something for your own program at Providence. Or if you have you want to go the step further and say, I'm interested. Even if you're not interested, you say you're interested. You do the interview. You get to campus. You have a five-star dinner. You take the PJ out to Lexington or Austin.
Yeah.
You have yourself a good couple nights. And you potentially get an offer. And then you bring that and you slap that down on Steve Napolillo's desk. And you say, the Longhorns want me. Or the Wildcats want me. And listen, success is fleeting in college hoops. I mean, we see it here. Just with the jobs that are open. Like jobs like this all together, like when was the last time these three jobs or three jobs equivalent like this were open in the same cycle? It shouldn't happen.
Right.
Success is fleeting. You're Ed Cooley. Hey, let's go out. Look out for yourself. You're not going to coach for another 50 years. You want to potentially take advantage of it. And that's not to scare anyone in Providence. That's the harsh reality of the business. Texas can offer you double what you're making. Kentucky can offer you double what you're making. Georgetown, might be, 50% more than what you're making. But, the point stands in how can you continue to grow Providence? How can you continue to squeeze every last drop out to the point where you either get more and you stay? And I think wholeheartedly, I believe he wants to stay.
Yeah.
But you're only in this position, once. You don't know if it will ever come back.
Opposition research. I love it.
Yeah.
I love it. Often I don't think about that part of the interview, but you're right. There's always an opportunity to learn if you do take the conversation. You do take the visit. You go and you say, wow, you do it this way. Interesting. We've been looking at trying to, reform this or maybe rebuild this or retool this, and you do it this way and you do it the best. Interesting. Maybe we should try that. That's a very interesting point.
I'm sorry. I was laughing at Maury because the way he was talking, you sounded like Vince Vaughn turning off that woman in the office at the beginning of Wedding Crashers when he's talking about dating. I'm interested, could be interested. Maybe I'm not that interested, but then maybe she's interested. So then I'm interested. And so then we're both interested.
Right.
The way you were saying,
that's the point. That's where we're at.
But it's true. It's true. And it's a great point about picking up things from different places. It never hurts to take an interview, right? And that goes with any job. It could be a college basketball coach. It could be a sportscaster in you know, Bangor, Maine. Like, who knows? You may find something to pick up on that, you know, a station does, that a workplace does, that a whatever, and you take it with you from somewhere. And, you know, but I think the bigger point is you're in the position that you're in right now as Ed Cooley. And I think we've had this conversation off the pod, but here on the pod, like it would take a lot. It would take a lot, but are those the programs that can put a lot on the table to, you know, catch your attention? And, and they are. They are. Yeah.
Unfortunately, they are. No, nobody listening to this podcast who's a fan of one of these four teams or a fan of Providence wants to hear that. But there is bigger, fatter, better, deeper money, deeper pockets elsewhere than Providence, Rhode Island. And you just have to come to terms with that. And when you do understand that, then you can look at yourself in the mirror and say, all right, what continues to be the best package that we can offer to retain our homegrown coach?
But I think the point, too, that we made earlier is it is a tribute to Providence College. It's a tribute to the athletic program there and what the men's basketball program has become, that it would take a lot to move Ed Cooley to get his attention, because it has not, it is now a great job and a great program. He's not leaving for anything,
for sure,
folks. And that's a compliment and a tribute to what they've been doing at Providence College, building up the program.
Right. Yeah. My argument, my stance on that was considering what we had spoken about earlier in the pod.
Absolutely.
That Providence has gotten to such a level.
Yeah.
That, you know, you still have to go take it. Because if this was like Bill said earlier, if this was 10 or 15 years ago and someone called, you're not catching that flight back to Providence. Like, that's a one-way ticket to Austin or Lexington or DC. You know, now it's, I'm definitely coming home, but I want to come home with a little bit more knowledge upstairs.
Yep.
Yeah, a little more knowledge, a little more leverage, you know, certainly a little more wherewithal of where I stand in the pecking order. I mean, Ed Cooley is the National Coach of the Year. He has reached that height. He's reached a Sweet 16. His stated goal when he got here was he was going to build Providence brick by brick, was the phrase he used at his introductory press conference. And his stated goal was to try to win a national championship here. And I know every coach says that. You know, realistically, there's only about, you know, a dozen, two dozen schools who could really do it. You know, and are you at one of those dozen or two dozen schools? And does that matter to you going forward? You know, because Ed Cooley, if you look at what he's done at Providence, I mean, he's going to have statues outside buildings on campus. He's going to have, you know, buildings named after him. He's going to have a place in the city, a place in that program that is going to be so special ultimately when he decides to step away from the Friars. You know, he's carved out such a niche there with his story, with his performance, with his personality, just with who he is. You know, as a media member, selfishly, I don't want to see Ed go. He makes my job fun. And in certain ways, he makes it easy because he is so quotable and forthcoming and real in that way. And you know, you guys have been in the industry long enough, like I have, you know that a lot of people just aren't those things. You know, he is elite in that way. He is at the high end of the scale. You know, and certainly if you look at a place like Georgetown, I mean, what do they need to offer to turn his head? The price is probably too high based on what Providence is paying him now, based on what he has built here. You know, it doesn't make sense for Georgetown to offer the contract it would take to turn his head. They could hire very well at a fraction of that cost. You know, if you look at Texas, you never know what's going to happen there. You have an interim situation, you know, and certainly Kentucky, you could have discussions. John Calipari could stay. He's won a national championship there. He runs the NBA prep school there. You know, but if Big Blue Nation wants to pivot, you know, and certainly look elsewhere, I mean, the names would be on the list. You're looking at like Mark Few from Gonzaga. You know, Maury brought up a good one. Scott Drew from Baylor would be a good hire. You know, for me, this is a phone call that I would deny I ever made if I was Kentucky's athletic director. But I'd try Billy Donovan and see if he wanted to leave the NBA and give college one more go. And if Billy turns me down quietly behind the scenes, that's okay. That can never get out that I couldn't hire Florida's former coach, because in the SEC, I'd get scared for that, even if he's in the NBA now or not. You know, but what happens there is when one of those jobs opens, and you know, we're not saying that any of the three will, but when that happens, you do have ripple effects across the sport. You know, Mick Cronin goes from Cincinnati to UCLA. Well, who does Cincinnati hire? They hire Wes Miller. Well, who does UNC Greensboro hire? You know, and it just goes on and on and on. And normally, if it's a program in the NEC or in America East or in the Missouri Valley, you're not going to feel it here. But if it's the top of the sport and you're seeing Kentucky, Texas, Georgetown potentially open, you know, that's seismic enough where it could touch us here in this market in some way, you know, in some way, whether it's directly or indirectly. And so something to monitor over the last 2 months, you know, as you continue to watch teams here. I do want to wrap up with a note of congratulations for our co-conspirator, Nick Coit, the state sportscaster of the year, according to the National Sports Media Association. Coity's fourth victory in that category. We offer you a round of applause, congratulations, and a safe trip to North Carolina in June to see our good friend Dave Gorin.
Well, I'm going to turn it right back around on you and congratulate our good friend, the leader of this podcast, Bill Koch, for his fourth NSMA Sports Writer of the Year honor. BK, you are the man. You work so hard. You are so versatile in everything that you cover in the state. You know it so well. You are a Rhode Islander, you know, through and through, and it makes you such a great and talented writer, buddy. So it's fun to work with you, and obviously you're a great friend, but you know, which is even better.
Four banners each.
I'm blushing. Folks can't see me now, but I am. I'm blushing here. Coit, you're far too kind. You are all those things and more. You know, and certainly I love doing this with you too, both of you. You know, because you guys make me better. You do. You guys make me better. You guys make covering sports in the state better. You know, you raise the bar, both of you, for all of us. You know, you guys push it forward, you know, whether it's with Friday Night Football or College Hoops, you know, or both of you, your ability to, you know, be flexible and to, you know, folks, we have a conversation about the business side of college basketball that people don't often see, but that we talk about. The business side of the media industry is not something that we put out on Front Street all the time, but it can be difficult. And you do deal with management and budgets and, you know, staffing and, you know, not enough hours in a day and all those things. And you know, our jobs are fun. It's not real life. You know, I say all the time, my brother's a firefighter. He has the real job. It's not me. You know, I get to go watch basketball every night. You know, he's pulling people out of burning buildings and, you know, giving Narcan shots and, you know, trying to save folks who need much more help than I can offer. You know, but I appreciate, you know, working with you guys and your willingness to sacrifice, you know, your willingness to be available for the pod and, you know, just for someone to talk to at times, someone to have a beer with on a Friday. You know, and long may we continue here in and elsewhere.
Long live the podcast.
That's right.
And let's celebrate by all meeting for a 2 o'clock tip off at the Pizzatola Center Saturday, baby. Round all Princeton.
Right. I will, I'll be on the road. I'll be watching the Friars from the media room at UMass. I'm going to go to nice. UMass URI. That's a 4:30 tip. I figure I can watch Providence play. I can get Ed Cooley postgame on Zoom, which he'll most likely be available. And, get out to the court at Mullen Center just in time for the tip on Saturday. Sunday, I'll be at the URI Women. Most likely Monday, Coit, I will be joining you at Brown for the Brown Women.
Nice.
They have a Martin Luther King Day matinee. I think that's something that I'm looking forward to getting out to. I haven't seen the Bears since early in the season. Would like to see them in Ivy League play. So that's my next few days for sure.
No New Haven style pizza at Yale on Monday?
Man, you know, I weighed it. I did. I thought about it. I thought about making the trip with the Brown men. I did. I've been to Yale once. I think it was pre-pandemic at some point. Just like anywhere else in the Ivy League, old gym, history just dripping from the walls. You always have that certain feeling when you walk into an Ivy League gym. It's just steeped in tradition, most of them. It's not exactly the creature comforts of some other places that you could go to. But you trade it off for the atmosphere. I mean, Maury has the gold standard with the Palestra, grew up with it right in your backyard. It's not the most comfortable place to watch a game, but you trade that off for the experience 100 times out of 100.
Yeah. The seats are sort of like Fenway, if you're taller, your knees are hitting the back of this, the row in front of you, right. But there is something special when you walk into an arena, and it's all just down from there. When you walk in at Yale, you just see, the wooden the wooden seats and things like that on your right and your left. If you haven't gotten a Yale out there, definitely try to get down there. It's an easy hop, skip, and a jump on I-95. Even if it isn't for Brown Yale, even if it's like Harvard Yale is just like a mini Duke North Carolina on a Friday night. I put this out there the other, I think it was last week, but Ivy League hoops, on a cold winter night, there's just something warm and comforting about it.
Yeah, very competitive games, very tight. Hopefully Brown can pick one up against Princeton on Saturday. Coit obviously tipping his hand. He will be there in sideline capacity as usual. Folks, we thank you all for listening. We appreciate it. We hope you get out to the games, and we will return next week with our next edition of the pod. Thank you all very much.